As we get into Mark, you know, Jesus, our ultimate action hero, he's waging a battle against the enemies who are keeping us captive and away from a relationship with God. He's right in the middle of battling with the Pharisees, you know, the members of the religious establishment of the day, the ones who have this desire to keep this power and this control. They're all so good looking on the outside, but they're corrupt and they're evil on the inside. Jesus, he first demonstrates this taking over of the power through this very dramatic scene of forgiving the sins of a paralytic man as his friends lower him down through the ceiling. And you may remember that from a little over a month ago. It may have been meant as a demonstration for how Judaism of its day, led by the Pharisees and the Sadducees, was keeping humans from experiencing God. And that it took faith, not who you know, to get to God. And that the real thing keeping us away from God is our need for forgiveness from sin. Jesus is telling the Pharisees in no uncertain terms that he was the Messiah, even though he never directly used those terms. And then to show that this condition of sin that is separating us from God, that he is the answer to it, Jesus goes and he calls a filthy tax collector. And then he actually went to that tax collector's house for a party and a gathering with all these other sinners. See, as a doctor making a house call, Jesus has come to planet Earth to heal us from our disease of sin. So this morning, we're going to be seeing scenes 3, 4, and 5 as Jesus demonstrates that the old system of man-made rules is contrary to the character of God, and that it cannot hold his new paradigm. So our scripture, as we pick up in Mark, chapter 2, verse 18. Now John's disciples and the Pharisees were fasting. Some people came and asked Jesus, how is it that John's disciples and the disciples of the Pharisees are fasting, but yours are not? Jesus answered, how can the guest of the bridegroom fast while he is with them? They cannot so long as they have him with them. But the time will come when the bridegroom will be taken from them. And on that day, they will fast. Now, the Old Testament, it set aside a specific day a year for fasting for every single one of the Jews. That was the Day of Atonement. And Luke tells us that the Pharisees, they actually fasted on Monday and on Thursdays. Now, John's disciples, they erroneously sided with the Pharisees, and they also fasted on those two particular days. So the question arises, if John's disciples fast, why are Jesus' disciples feasting? Now, the Pharisees, they fasted to show their piety. And John's, they did it as a sign of mourning for sin and to prepare themselves for the coming of the Messiah. But the Messiah, he was already there. He's already here. So there's no fasting that is needed. The crucifixion, it was coming. And at that time, the disciples, they would mourn, but not for very long. So Jesus goes on, and next he introduces the idea that the old way of rule-keeping was not part of what the Messiah was all about. And in verse 21, he says, no one sews a patch of unshrunk cloth on an old garment. Otherwise, the new piece will pull away from the old, making the tear worse. And no one pours new wine into old wineskins. Otherwise, the wine will burst the skins, and both the wine and the wineskin will be ruined. No, they pour new wine into new wine skins. Now, the idea here is simple, and yet it's profound in its implications. Just as no one would go and take a piece of unshrunk cloth and patch it on an old garment, You cannot sew Jesus into the current system of Judaism. It would literally tear away from it. Jesus, he represents approaching God personally through our high priest, Jesus Christ himself, not through animal sacrifices, which had been done for so long. The new system, it stretches the old system way too much. Wineskins. Wineskins were made of this watertight goatskin. And as the grapes fermented, it would stretch the skin. And once the skin was stretched, it could not be used for fresh wine anymore because it had no more room to grow. It had no more elasticity. Judaism, it could not contain the new thing the Messiah was about. Judaism was about the law. Jesus fulfilled the law and brought about God's love and his grace, which the law could not stretch enough to do. The law itself, it looked to the Messiah. But the men who ran Judaism, they were too rigid to expand, to include the grace of God through Jesus Christ. So the Messiah, he brings about a new covenant with God, a new wineskin, if you will. So Jesus, next he goes and he challenges a sacred cow of the Jewish system. That is the Sabbath. At verse 23, one Sabbath, Jesus was going through the grain fields. And as the disciples walked along, they began to pick some heads of grain. The Pharisees said to him, "Look, why are they doing what is unlawful on the Sabbath?" He answered, "Have you never read what David did when his companions were hungry and in need? In the days of Abiathar, the high priest, he entered the house of God and ate the consecrated bread, which is lawful only for the priests to eat. And he also gave some to his companions." See, Jesus here, he demonstrates how the old wineskin of Judaism won't fit the new paradigm by eating and then also by healing on the Sabbath. The Sabbath, it was a really big deal to the Jews. The religious leaders, they had created an entire encyclopedia about what could and could not be done on the Sabbath. It got so bad that they, the religious leaders, they actually became the lords of the Sabbath. The Pharisees had declared 39 categories of action which were forbidden on the Sabbath. See, it was originally created as a day of rest in the book of Exodus. The Sabbath is supposed to be a day to rejuvenate, to set the dials back, if you will. It was a day to worship God and to reflect on him. The Pharisees, they were so good at building fences to make sure that no one violated the Sabbath that they actually fenced God out of the Sabbath and they fenced man in to a slavish adherence of what became a silly bunch of contradictory rules. So Jesus and his disciples, they're having a leisurely stroll on the Sabbath when they get hungry, and so they snacked on a few pieces of grain from a farmer's field. Now, on a normal day, that would have been acceptable according to the law. But on the Sabbath, the Pharisees had decreed that you could not walk any length of distance. You could not do work of any kind, including harvesting. The idea of the Sabbath was to not do any of your regular work. So Jesus and his men, they were not farmers harvesting a crop. They were simply people who were picking, they were gleaning some grain because they were hungry and they wanted to eat. And this so irked the Pharisees that they go and challenge him on it. And instead of becoming defensive, Jesus throws out their whole notion of the Sabbath. And then he goes on to declare his divinity and his lordship over the Sabbath itself. Now the story that is mentioned in verse 25 and 26, it's actually recorded in 1 Samuel chapter 21. Each day of the week, there were 12 loaves of bread that were placed on the altar in the tabernacle, and they represent the 12 tribes of Israel. And when they were replaced with a new fresh set of 12 loaves of bread, the priest could eat the bread if they wanted to in a holy place. So when David and his men are running from Saul, Ahimelech, the high priest, okayed them having the bread because their needs were more important than the regulations. Now in our scripture, Jesus mentions Abiathar who did this. And it was a rabbinical method of mentioning the person who would have been the most prominent in that particular section. And Abiathar is the son and the successor to Ahimelech. And he may have been involved in the incident as well. But you see, Jesus' point is that discernment and compassion are more important than slavish obedience. He is not condoning breaking God's law, but he is saying, if you condemn me, then you must condemn David for what he had done, and which the scripture in 1 Samuel does not do. And then he said to them, the Sabbath was made for man, not man for the Sabbath. So the Son of Man is Lord, even of the Sabbath. The Pharisees, they're very concerned with the letter of the law. And Jesus, he always focused on the law's intent, which was to provide a day of rest and worship. Now, some work could be done by the priests who are offering the sacrifices, for instance. And then next, Jesus goes on and he demonstrates other hypocrisies and other inconsistencies of how the Sabbath rules were all laid down. But right here, the point is that the Sabbath is for men to rejuvenate themselves rather than for man to serve the Sabbath. Now we pick up at chapter 3 at verse 1. Another time, Jesus went into the synagogue, and a man with a shriveled hand was there. Some of them were looking for a reason to accuse Jesus, so they watched him closely to see if he would heal on the Sabbath. Jesus said to the man with the shriveled hand, stand up in front of everyone. And then he asked them, speaking of the Pharisees, which is lawful on the Sabbath, to do good or to do evil, to save life or to kill? But they remained silent. The Pharisees, they're watching Jesus in everything that he did and everywhere that he went, looking for an opportunity to pin something against him. Healing, in their view, was working because it was practicing medicine. Kirsten's in trouble on the Sabbath. Unless someone's life was in danger, there no healing could take place on the Sabbath. Keeping the rules was more important than doing good. Jesus saw a need and he did something about it, and it didn't matter what day it was. All that the Pharisees saw was an opportunity to accuse. This man and his condition, it meant absolutely nothing to them. And Jesus is going to make a big point that he is the Lord of the Sabbath. He's also saying that the Pharisees' rules, they are not God's law. So he has the man stand up. He asks the Pharisees if it's lawful. Now they could have answered that no, it is not lawful because it was not a life-threatening event. Jesus could have waited until the next day, but then he would have elevated the Pharisees' rules to the level of God's law. It's actually interesting that they didn't answer. But perhaps in their hearts, they knew that that rule just simply did not make sense. Thank you. I have one back there, but I'm going to drink anyway. I'll drink both of them. That rule just simply did not make sense to them. The tense that is listed here or is made here is that Jesus, he leaves an embarrassingly long amount of time for them to respond. You know that awkward silence that always takes place? But they would not. Now, Matthew's gospel, it goes on and adds in Matthew chapter 12, if any of you has a sheep and it falls into a pit on the Sabbath, will you not take hold of it and lift it out? How much more valuable is a person than a sheep? And then he said to the man, stretch out your hand. So he stretched it out and it was completely restored, just as sound as the other. As Jesus waits, he sees the hardness. See, they won't think. They won't adjust. They won't do anything that threatens their personal power. Now, his reaction is emotional. There's anger and there's sorrow. Other versions suggest that instead of sorrow, there may have been grief, but they're very close to each other. I imagine he felt anger because this hardness was keeping people like this man with the shriveled hand in bondage to the disability. And the rules in general kept the people in bondage to them, closing the door to the Messiah. You see, man standing in the way of God's healing should always bring up anger in our souls. But there was also a feeling of sorrow as to what they were missing. Healing in both the body and the soul. Sometimes we are so stuck in our own ways, no matter how miserable we are, that we miss the wonderful opportunity to jettison our way and to give ourselves fully over to the Lord. And so he looked around at them in anger and deeply distressed at their stubborn hearts. He said to the man, stretch out your hand. He stretched it out and the hand was completely restored. Then the Pharisees went out and began to plot with the Herodians how they might kill Jesus. Now Jesus, he simply told the man to stretch out his hand, which is probably something that he could not have done before. And it was healed instantly. Jesus didn't even do anything that could have been construed as healing. And yet he had so embarrassed the Pharisees that their response is to plot murder against him. Itself is a violation of the Sabbath. You see, it was not legal to do Sabbath. Oh, wait. It was not legal to do evil on the Sabbath, or any other day for that matter, really. The Pharisees, they're so angry as well. But their anger turns to rage, and they sought to do evil. When anger turns to doing harm, it is not righteous anger. Many times, if you inspect anger, you find that the anger comes from something involving you. It may not do good. You may be embarrassed, shamed, maybe guilty. You may be knocked off your high horse. But you see, Jesus' anger was focused on what keeps people away from God. It had nothing to do with a personal slight. The Pharisees, they then went and plotted with the Herodians, which is a very unlikely alliance since those two groups actually hated each other. The Pharisees hated Rome, and they wanted to overthrow the occupation of Palestine. And the Herodians, they wanted to work within the Roman system to try to restore the Herods back to full reign. But you see, to fight against the authority of Jesus, they find this common ground. It's amazing the lengths that we will sometimes go to fight against God's love and his healing. So we wrap it up this morning. Have you created rules that supersede God? Is your response to life one of following the rules or following God's character? The Pharisees, they were blindly following their own rules, so much so that they were blind to the needs within themselves or the needs around them. And Jesus ruled with authority and with love. Paul says in 1 Corinthians at chapter 10, verse 23, I have the right to do anything, you say, but not everything is beneficial. I have the right to do anything, but not everything is constructive. No one should seek their own good, but the good of others. I like the way the Message puts that. So I want to read the Message for you of those verses. Look at it one way. You could say anything goes because of God's immense generosity and grace. We don't have to dissect and scrutinize every action to see if it will pass muster. But the point is to not just get by. We want to live well. But our foremost efforts should be to help others to live well. Are we so stuck in rules and regulation? Or are we working at the intent and working at living well? Everyone needs compassion, including us.